One of the things that was seen in the PDK trials, I think is very interesting, is there is a correlation of progression-free survival with LDH. Now, LDH has been looked at. It's both a prognostic marker. In other words, if you have a high LDH, you won't do as well as a predictive marker for chemotherapy, where if you have a high LDH, you're less likely to respond to chemotherapy with colorectal cancer. And historically has been used as a stratification criteria to make certain that arm A and arm B have the same number of these sick patients. People have said, well, maybe it's a marker of tumor burden. No one really has known. Now, in both these trials, what they did is that following practice of some older trials, they used LDH as well as performance status as stratification criteria, because these were very important prognostic criteria. You want to make certain there was no imbalance between the two arms, that someone later on could say, oh, you had all the PS2 patients on one arm or all the high LDH on the other. These are the confirmed trials? These are in the confirmed trials. Huh. So basically, they're randomized. So it was stratified that way. So in other words, they're equal number of high LDH patients in both arms. There are equal number of PS2 patients in both arms, whether you got PDK-ZK or whether you didn't.
What was the total number of patients?
About 1,100. But when you look at it, and this is an exploratory analysis, but as exploratory analyses go, it's pretty good because it's not just data dredging. These patients were randomized by those. When you look at the patients who had high LDH, so this is the worst group, they had the greatest benefit from adding PDK-ZK. And in fact, the hazard ratio goes from 0.88 to 0.65 with the addition of PDK-ZK. So this is a sicker group of patients, maybe even more sensitive to any toxicity that it may bring. In fact, what you do is you take the progression-free survival of the worst group and you bring it up to the median.
I guess it implies that the other group, the normal or low LDH level,
may or may not be getting as much benefit.
Or any benefit.
Actually, there was some benefit. So, and
what fraction of patients had the high LDH roughly?
The way this was done, roughly about a third of patients. So it's a large chunk. And now the question is, what does this mean? So there are a couple possibilities. One is that a high LDH may be a marker for patients who, whatever is going on in their tumor, is more likely to be helped by having a small molecule VEGF inhibitor. The other thing is maybe there's something about LDH itself. I think that's less likely, though LDH actually has to do with anaerobic metabolism of glucose. So if you think about it with hypoxia, it's not that far out. And in fact, LDH is downstream from VEGF.
Hmm. So these are tumors where hypoxia is more important
More active? Now, when you go back to bevacizumab, there are no markers really that we know of to, you could say this is a good thing. Everyone seems to be helped by bevacizumab. On the other hand, it's a targeted therapy, but we don't know who's going to benefit from bevacizumab or not. You may actually have a tool to say, at least in these patients, who may be more likely to benefit. Now, since this was an exploratory analysis, what's been particularly interesting is they use that, and even before CONFIRM-2 was unblinded, remember, CONFIRM-2 is the second-line study, and they said, we're going to do an analysis of this. And we don't have all the data back yet because it's just been released in a press release. However, apparently LDH is at least as important in the CONFIRM-2 trial. So CONFIRM-2 confirmed the role of LDH. So it wasn't just a one trial, data mining, looking at this thing. You now have two trials, including one that was, where it was looked at more in a prospective fashion, that high LDH seemed to make a difference.
What about the overall effect?
The overall effect also did not reach its endpoint.
Has anybody looked at LDH in terms of benefits from bevacizumab?
Actually, there's very little on that. However, it's been presented. I don't think it's in the papers. It does not seem to make a difference.
Also, in the placebo arms of the confirmed trial, was LDH correlated with prognosis?
Yes, very strongly. That's what I was saying. So therefore, when you looked at the high LDH group, the high LDH placebo did the worst of all, while high LDH with PDK-ZK did as well as the low LDH. So the question is that I think you brought up a very good point with something that took a long time to find with looking up with the bevacizumab, is that one way of looking at this is saying bevacizumab is so good, it doesn't matter whether you're high LDH or low LDH. The other thing, which I think is a much more interesting possibility, is that we're talking about different pathways. Because if PDK-ZK or other small molecule VEGF inhibitors are an oral way to give bevacizumab, to me, that's not as interesting.
Well, you said they blocked all three of the receptors too,
right?
Correct?
So the question, but maybe VEGF receptor 2 is what's
important.
It's the
only one that matters, right?
And so if that's what's important, and also VEGF-A may signal through VEGF receptor 1 as well. So on the other hand, if there is a different group of patients, In other words, there's a specific group of patients that may benefit from Avastin or bevacizumab, but may also benefit from a small molecule VEGF inhibitor. To me, that's actually very interesting. For the first time, you may actually have a marker for an angiogenesis inhibitor, which we really haven't had before. Now, the question that comes up, is PDKZK going to be the drug? I mean, we can talk more about, you know, ways in which I think you could improve its tolerability. I think there are ways that you can improve the, you know, the pharmacokinetics. There are also many other small molecule VEGF inhibitors that are in various stages of development, including some in other indications like SU11248 or Sutent.